Johnny Blaze, Lou Diamond,
represent Marcus,
Tony Stark,
Universal Frontier,
Original Blood Clot, my boys.
Who come to get you? None. They want guns. I'll be the first to set off shit. Laugh to run. Rule woe together as one. I call my brother son cause he shine like one. Check it. Scriptures hit the body like sword or shoddy. Like my hair naughty and my nose piece snotty. Fuck a nigga hottie. That whole pussy probably burn like the deserts of Mogadi for red. Ain't nothing fraudulent here. We pioneer. Commandeer a new frontier. This be the whoop. Yeah. 36 chambers of fear. Huh. You lost it. Information leaking out your forces. Time to pour. Fit your crown and leave the grounds. There's a new sheriff in town holding it down. It's the two holster, shit shot smoker. Wanted dead or alive, bounty on the poster. Wild in the west, a student of my culture. And life is the test. Hold up, let a nigga catch his breath. I'm still paying dues and the last one is death. Back to the essence with that shit you stressing. This rap profession, now beat the cap. The son of the shadow, Al bless my style. Criminology pays the last times and days. Johnny fucking Blaze. This goes for niggas who know.
Hey, 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah, what do you know?
It's me. forget it. The K-O double G.
Mobbing with that J-O double crooked letter. I don't know. Didn't really fit there, but the P to the E-R-E crooked letter.
Okay.
That's a little too much information.
Yeah, that's enough there. you're revealing my... My secret identity.
Yeah. And the secret location.
So we have Ben Abmydellis over here. I'm Bad News Ramen. And no word on WrestleMania yet, huh? Nothing yet? So still haven't gotten the okay? You need me to give a call to the boss or something?
I don't know if that's going to do any good.
It's a once-in-a-lifetime thing, dude.
Both
you guys are rolling in the money around there, dude.
I don't know if I'd go that far.
Well, you're making over 40, right?
I am.
And she's making over 40, right?
Let's not get into that. Yeah, I said a few letters, and you said I was getting too deep into the business. Now you're asking for the financials over here.
I'm not asking what she does. She makes at least 40 grand.
I wouldn't say that necessarily.
Okay, so she makes like at least 38 then. 37?
That sounds like a respectable ballpark.
And you're making over 40, right?
I am.
Okay, so if you do 40 plus 30, that's 70. And then you got a couple more that's like, you guys are both pulling like 75 grand a year. You know, as the way things are, if there's someone that makes like 75 grand a year, or, you know, it's like there's nothing really that you can really enjoy. You know, like you're pretty much set and then you can do things that you want to do. And the only thing that you make you enjoy it more if you're like a multi-billionaire or millionaire that you could buy whatever you want. But at 75 grand, you're looking pretty good a year, dude.
Sounds good. Yeah, yeah. Maybe you should give it a call.
Maybe I should, yeah. I mean,
you convinced me, but, you know, you're preaching to the conversion.
Twisting your arm over here, dude, with the arm bar. So, what do you want to talk about? Nothing really happened this week, right, in wrestling?
another boring week. Well, it's funny because, like, I mean, I thought Raw was decent, but, I mean, I think...
You really want to talk about Raw?
No, that's a...
Okay.
You cut me off.
I'm sorry, man.
Right, that's a good place to cut me right off, you know, right after the butt.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought Raw was decent. However, I think the two biggest things that happened in the business this week were both podcast related. One being the CM Punk podcast that dropped last week, Thanksgiving, and then the other one Monday night, the Steve Austin Vince McMahon live broadcast through the network. So,
can you listen to that one too? I read the Bleacher Report highlights of it and stuff.
Yeah, I read highlights of it. I was watching it before I came over, so I got maybe like 30 or so minutes in. So I'm not completely done with it, but I got the gist, or at least I got the beginning of it. Right?
So what do you want to talk about first?
I mean, the Punk one was the bombshell to me. So I think that's the one. I mean, I think that's the one that needs to get dissected a little bit. So I would like to start there.
Okay.
So you listened to it, right? Even though you're harassing me on, you're attempting to troll me on text.
Yeah, trolling you on yeah. I said CM Punk is the worst wrestler ever, or something like that, and he's married to AJ Cunt or whatever it is and stuff and everything, right?
Wow.
that's what it was on. It was on like the YouTube one. Like some guy was trolling as like Anakin Skywalker or something like that, and just like, oh yeah, the good old trolls. I haven't really been on Twitter that much, and then. You know, like YouTube, I'm hardly ever on YouTube, but, you know, it's not because of trolls, but it's like, oh yeah, when you're on Twitter, you have to deal with trolls. So, Maybe I'm a troll. I don't know. I don't think I am. So you want me to you want to ask me about it? You want me to ask you about it? Like what were three things that you took away from that really stood out to you? And it's funny because when we were talking right before Punk left, a lot of the questions that I had, and even like the things that I said, you know, because I remember you saying like, man, like Punk doesn't look good, dude. And to me, I think that's the biggest thing about everything what he said with the whole.
The doctor
podcast itself, yeah, just his health in general. I mean, the fool had a staph infection that turned into like an M, whatever the M
MR, a MRSA.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean that seemed pretty. I mean that's obviously really bad. That and the concussion thing is kind of funny because you know you follow it, like all the like through like pro sports and particularly football, and you know they have like a baseline of what they're like whatever level should be, and then they go concussion test after. But you always kind of wonder because some of these guys take vicious hits and they pass the concussion test and they're back in a week.
So before we get into the concussion thing, I'm cutting you off again. There's no but this time. One thing that I kind of picked up on, and I really didn't want to. I mean, I didn't see too much into it, but they wanted him to take a urine test, and he kind of refused to take a urine test.
Yeah.
So, and this guy's supposed to be straight edge. So, I mean, when I heard it, I think, I mean, I didn't really like the more, I, like, when I first heard it, I was like, yeah, like, you know, really they wanted to see him punk the guy straight edge, but what if the guy was hiding something? I don't think he was, but I mean, the only thing I could think is like he would take, I mean, the only thing, if he's going to take like roids or anything like that, it'd be because he couldn't recover. You know, so I'm thinking that's maybe the only reason why he would take it if he took it at all. But do you give him the benefit of the doubt on that?
Yeah, I didn't look at it that way because, I mean, I think he had been pushed to a certain point already. And then, I mean, it seemed like, okay, so I have no reason to doubt anything that Punk said. That said, like, you know, there's always going to be two sides to a story. But if you just take from what he said at face value, they knew he had been working extremely hard for a long period of time, and kept saying, "Well, we need this out of you, and you know we're going to pay you back at some point." I think that was kind of a slap in the face to say, "Oh yeah, we need you to take a drug test too." And I thought his rebuttal was pretty good. If all those people are subject to that same testing, if he's going to turn around and say, "Well, did you take your test, Triple H?" That was like one of my big takeaways is like the relationship between him and Triple H seems to use the word that the 49ers media likes to use, seemed toxic, right?
Yeah.
Didn't seem like him and Vince had any like, you know, they definitely weren't seeing eye to eye, but didn't seem like there was any kind of personal dislike or like seemed like both of them were willing to kind of just say, you know, okay, you're not willing to do what I want to do. I'm not willing to do what you're going to do, so we could part ways. But it seemed like Triple H was kind of there, like twisting the knife at certain points in it, being there like where he really didn't need to be. And you know, I think he's got a valid point to turn around and say, "You want me to take a test? Well, what did you?" Because he tried. What did he say? He said like, you know, so and so just took a test, right? And Punk's response was, "Well, did you take yours?" And Triple H has nothing to say. It seems valid to me.
Yeah, I just wanted to kind of get some clarity on that with you. I mean, I was kind of. I was kind of thinking the same thing. Like I didn't really think about it, and I was kind of thinking about it today. But I mean, you know how I feel about CM Punk, and maybe people don't know how I feel about CM Punk. But I mean, he's definitely.
You were thinking when this stuff is over, you two might move in together.
Yeah,
you missed his musk.
I missed his musk. Yeah. Why don't you stop talking for a while there, champ?
Sit out a couple plays.
So. I mean, with me, like, seeing them play, so I've had, like, growing up being a wrestling fan, I've had wrestlers that I would watch and, like, take an investment in and would kind of keep me in wrestling. And it's kind of funny, I went through the same cycle when CM Punk left. I kind of stopped watching wrestling for a while. I think the first one was probably want to say, like, the Blue Blazer. You know, like, he was one of the first guys I really got invested in, but, of course, he didn't have a long tenure, so it wasn't like, oh, I forget it, I'm not going to watch anymore. Macho Man was definitely one of them. He was one of the guys that I always watched. Rick Rude was as well, and then it was just, like, Ric Flair. And then Benoit was kind of, like, the guy that I followed the whole time.
Right.
And then it was Scott Hall. And Scott Hall, when they released Scott Hall, that's when I kind of stopped watching wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
Because there really wasn't any characters that I really liked, and then of course, The Rock brought me back into wrestling when he came back. And The Rock was another guy, too, that I would watch pretty religiously. But then once CM Punk came around, that's when I really got into it again. I mean, he's definitely one of those wrestlers that kept me in wrestling and, like, to me, is like one of my favorite superstars of all time.
If I may speak for you, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think you got back into it when The Rock returned to kind of start off, like, his feud with Cena. And then when you were watching it, you started to see the stuff that Punk was doing, and that's when you kind of latched on as Punk being your guy.
The guy before that, before CM Punk really became something, because, I mean, when The Rock was there, CM Punk was doing his whole kind of, he was in a mask and stuff, going against Undertaker and stuff. I really didn't like it. I think he was toward the tail end of his Jeff Hardy stuff, and, you know, I'm just like, whatever. So it was Randy Orton for a little bit, and then the second that CM Punk joined the Nexus and I started watching this guy talk and do all this stuff, I was like, all right. And then, of course, when he drops his famous promo, I don't want to call it pipe bomb because he doesn't like the word pipe bomb anymore.
I found that funny because the person that was using it most frequently was AJ. But let's just go move on past that.
Yeah. So getting back to this whole thing, it just shows like how much like this guy could have been. I mean, I think the thing you do take away from is Triple H and just kind of that whole kind of contentious relationship, and it really, you know, we kind of, you know, Triple H is kind of like a roller coaster, right? It's like we like certain things that he does. I thought when he first kind of had a bigger role in WWE, I kind of liked it, and then I'm just kind of looking back on everything. It's like, okay, so he already fought CM Punk once during when CM Punk was hot as all hell. He wanted to fight CM Punk again. What CM Punk says, like, you know, you're fighting. I'm not fighting you. You're fighting me. You need to fight me.
Yeah, I don't need to fight you.
Yeah. And then, of course, then CM Punk, you know, I mean, Triple H, you know, you look at what he's done. It's like, so Undertaker, he tries to get some type of heat with Undertaker, you know, get some rub from Undertaker, a rub from Brock Lesnar, which was really, I think, really destroyed Lesnar's return. I mean, it just really soured me on Lesnar. And it didn't take, and it took, like, Lesnar fighting Punk and then fighting The Undertaker for me to, like, okay, you know, Lesnar's kind of, all right, Lesnar's a force. You know, I enjoy what he does. You know, he's an intriguing personality. And then he wants to fight CM Punk again. It's like, dude, hang up your flipping boots, man.
Well, then on top of it, he did the Kevin Nash Rey Mysterio patronizing move where he said, well, you know, I'll let you win this time. Which, like, and then that's kind of, I think, where Punk said, like, you know, I don't need this match, you do. But, yeah, it's like, oh, well, I'll let you win this time. That seems like a tad bit insulting.
So, but what do you feel about Triple H? I mean, in terms of, like, with all these matches that he's doing, I'm like, what's your report card on this guy? Because I kind of see what he does, you know? Like, he'll get a rub off of, like, a really famous person, like, say, like Ric Flair. And he'll beat Flair the first time, or beat him, like, three or four times. And at the very end, he lets Flair beat him. But he gets all this, like, kind of rub from these great guys, and then all these guys, like, say, well, Triple H is such a great performer. Look at all these guys that he's faced. I mean, I just feel like he's padding his new DVD that's going to come out, you know, talking about his legacy and all this garbage, which isn't in the works, but I think 5 or 10 years down the line, thinking about his DVD and saying, oh, look at all these guys that I face and stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, I just think, he seems to be... Even though, like, he tries to make it look like he's gone behind the scenes to be this, like, this executive, he seems like he still needs to make all the stories involve him somehow and Stephanie, which, I mean, there's a point where that can be good, but it's not good right now. It's just way overdone, and I don't want to see him cut a promo. I don't want to see him in a match. Okay, I want him to book the show correctly. That's what would make me happy out of Triple H. And there's times when you get that, and then you take like 5 steps forward, and then you take 3 steps right back in the other direction. Tag team division is the perfect example. When he made a commitment to saying, I want the tag team division to be like something that people need to watch again, you had about a year, maybe a little bit over a year, where it was as good as it's been in a decade, easily. And then right away, he just starts splitting up teams for no reason. And I mean, I can't say that it's a direct correlation, but that's right around when, like, the Authority became, like, the only storyline that anyone was writing about. And like, that's kind of one of those self-serving moves that he seems to make.
Does the WWE have a problem because they cannot have a wrestler be the main antagonist. Because you look at when, I mean, they do have a playbook. You know, with the whole Attitude Era, McMahon was the main antagonist, the top heel in the company. They've never really had a wrestler as a heel that's reached that height or level. And I'm looking like, you know, you talk about like, you know, the storytelling of the 80s and the 90s, like if you would have like Macho Man be the top heel, the main antagonist for Hogan. And then, you know, Hogan, since he was the same match over and over again, and it's like you knew that Macho Man had a small window. What's the difference? I mean, did you like McMahon as the top heel? What's the difference between McMahon as the top heel and Triple H as the top heel?
One, McMahon cuts 100 times better promo than Triple H does. And just to me, it seems like when McMahon was doing it, McMahon was creating a character that nobody had ever seen. And it seems like Triple H is just running the Vince McMahon playbook. He's trying to be Vince right now. And it's like, you know, he's supposed to be this guy that has, like, this great mind for the business and this and that, cerebral assassin. Well, why don't you create your own way to be, like, a corporate heel instead of just running out the same... It's like, it's what he did when he was a wrestler, same promo over and over again. You know, the minute you hear any kind of sound come out of his mouth, you know what the rest of the entire sentence is going to be. And it's always going to be best for business over and over again. It was a good... was a good catchphrase when they started it, but he doesn't have anything else to go to, so it's just best for business, $9.99. Okay, that's all I ever hear Triple H doing. It's like it's dull, right? It's done. It's not new. It's not creative. It wasn't. If you're gonna say like he's trying to do what Vince did or be in that mold, he's not even coming into the same area code as what Vince was as the top heel.
I think the biggest difference between Vince being the top heel and Triple H is that Vince would put himself in situations where he'd be like the fool. Like, you know, like even watching like Monday Night War with the Undertaker and Sting one. I remember they show the one where Undertaker has his Vince McMahon's teddy bear from when he was a little kid and he burns it. Yeah, and McMahon's on his knees crying and stuff and everything. You would never see Triple H do that. And that's just kind of like the whole thing was that this guy, even when he's supposed to put someone over, he doesn't put him over. And I think like the key element, the perfect like Triple H in a box is
when that similar to a dig in a box.
Similar, yeah, but without the good singing in it, and the flowers and all that stuff. So when Daniel Bryan won the championship versus John Cena, and then Randy Orton cashed in the Money in the Bank, well, the next night, who got the rub off of that? It wasn't Randy Orton; it was Triple H. And it's just like, you know, you have this opportunity to put Randy Orton as a top heel. But this guy gets the rub. With everything that he does, he gets the rub from everybody else.
I remember we podcasted after that, and that's exactly what I was saying. You're saying, no, like, it's gonna be all right. But it's the same thing. He never gave Randy Orton the chance to be the number one heel. Even all he needed to do, really, in my opinion, he could even, in the Survivor Series match, I mean, if this match is so important to you, and you're supposed to be the game, why aren't you in that match, right? But he can't even, like, let himself get pinned by somebody in a Survivor Series match where there's infinite amount of ways to kind of come up with like some kind of flash pin or whatever it is, you know?
And McMahon, I mean, the whole thing is, and McMahon has done plenty of matches. He's done Hell in a Cell with Stone Cold, mm-hmm. and he's done other matches. The guy's like 60-some-odd years old going against the best face in the business, the most physical wrestler they have, and he's doing the job for him. And so, that yeah, I mean, it really kind of...
Sorry. Now I'm cutting you off. Here's the difference. I actually wanted to see Vince McMahon get his ass kicked. Triple H, I don't care. Okay, because I know most of the match is going to be him dominating, doing the same things, and then somewhere, something weird is going to happen. Well, he's still probably going to win, or like some fluke's going to happen where he loses, and that's the only way. Like Vince McMahon would get his ass kicked and get beat, and you'd get satisfaction out of it.
So. Instead of just making this all about Triple H, because then we can start talking about how he helped Kevin Nash and Bruno Sammartino, all this stuff, and we can go into all that. So, other thing from the Punk podcast that you took away. I mean, did we talk about his health enough?
I don't think we did. I don't want to sit here and just talk specifically about Punk's health per se, but I'd just say if that's the way that it is, then that's a problem, like for the locker room overall. Now, again, to be fair, not that this is one of the bigger ones, but I did have some time because I was off last week, and I did listen, because every once in a while I go and I'll listen to a Jericho podcast, and there's one where he had Dolph Ziggler, and they had the Doc on there. And this was pre-recorded, so nothing related to CM Punk, but like Jericho and Ziggler, they spoke really highly of him and said that the locker room felt very highly of him, which I kind of thought that was interesting, hearing that juxtaposed to how I just heard like Punk basically run the guy down. So I don't know if it's like a favorites thing or there's like some other reason why the Doc and CM Punk didn't get along and manifested itself that way. But if they're not taking care of their wrestlers overall, like I think that's a big problem.
Well, if you're not taking care of your number one jobber for the big matches, that's definitely a problem. And you know, there's been correlations between like NFL concussion policy and the WWE concussion policy. And to me, what I took away from that is that, okay, it fits the players that you don't care about. And it's kind of funny, like, even the things that, like, kind of, you know, me and you, after our podcast last week, you were talking about Richard Sherman and the stuff that he did. And he kind of brought that up, too, you know, saying, like, you know, certain players, they want players to play this, that, and this. And it, to me, it really kind of, it's always the company guy, you know, and people, and it's funny, like, everybody said that CM Punk is not the company guy, but he was the company guy. I mean, he did the jobs for everybody. He did the jobs for the part-timers, and they just used him. They always could rely on him, and he always did it. And you don't reward a guy like that. I mean, at the same time, it's like you have John Cena that didn't wrestle for such a long time because of his arm and stuff and everything, and you know, he was gone for a long time, and they want CM Punk to fight in tables, ladders, and chairs. Against Ryback or whatever, and he's supposed to have a 4-week recovery time.
I'll use a personal experience that I'll try to correlate here, right? So, you know, I'm a teacher, and so I had taught for a while, and then when the economy went bad, there wasn't many jobs out, so I had to go back to subbing for a while. And I did about 3 years straight where I was, like, extremely reliable sub for several districts that I work for, long-term job, at least once every year when I was in there, you know, doing all the work that a regular teacher would do at the sub rate for several months at a time. At the end of every year, there was no job to be had, you know, and you kind of do that when you're trying to, because as he said, like, you know, he was trying to prove to Vince that he could be the number one guy, because he knew they had, like, these kind of doubts about him, whether he was big enough or strong enough or could carry it and this and that. So you will do those things that you won't, like, when you're trying to prove that, you know, you're worthy of that position, you know, you'll kind of take less money or do things that, you know you're not getting, like, the full value of what you're worth. But after you get to a certain point, then it just, it becomes not worth it. And that's when I left teaching for a few years. Okay, now I'm back into it. I'm happy I am. That's what I wanted to do. Okay, but there was a point in time where it kind of mentally beats you down, okay, and it makes you, as he felt, like, not even want to continue to do, like, the one job that you were really looking to do, and you have to go do something else. So, like, luckily enough for him and good for him, he has the money that he can step away and just not work and think about what do I want to do next. You know, I didn't obviously have that luxury, okay, but, like, I'm glad I'm back into doing, like, what I want to do now. And I think it's, on a smaller scale, it's the same kind of thing. You know, you can put yourself out there and take less than what you're worth to try to prove yourself for a certain point, and then you get to a point where, you know, you feel like you're just ramming your head against a wall, and at that point, if you have the option to take your ball and go home, you kind of do it.
And the one thing that he was fighting was, when he kind of says, well, what would a Harley Race would have done? You know, and so that's kind of the other thing, too, is that, yeah, he's being taken advantage of, but... And they have this whole kind of myth of that you're an independent contractor, but you don't get all the benefits of being an independent contractor. Mm-hmm. You can't seek work elsewhere. The system is right now WWE run. It's the only game in town. And you have this mentality of, like, the great ones, like Harley Race, Ric Flair, do the job for anybody, whatever it was, because their love of the business. And to try to kind of, if you had to put someone over, you'd put someone over. So there's that mentality that you're facing too, and you know the thing is, the one thing about Punk was that everybody could relate to him. I think the same thing like Stone Cold. Everybody could relate to Stone Cold, you know. And so, you know, I'd always, like, people say, like, oh, you know, Stone Cold saved the WWE, and I always go, yeah, but you know what? The Rock did too. But the thing with The Rock was that The Rock's character was such a like a holier than thou character in terms of like he's better than everybody else. You know, you could relate to him because he's what you wish you could be. You know, you wish you could be as cool as The Rock. You wish like all the women, you know, like every guy that's watched wrestling, their girlfriends or whatever, they'll watch a Rock movie because The Rock is good to look at, this, that, and this. Where Stone Cold really kind of talked to like the everyman, yeah. And you know, like Dusty Rhodes with the working man. I mean, that's they were able to connect that way. Where and CM Punk was like the rebel, you know, like things that you wanted to say to people, the way that you wanted to be, you could live on your own terms, and people related to him that way. And I think there's a lot of everyman in that as well. And watching this guy over the, you know, last night I watched kind of Punk's run as a champion when he first won the championship, and I forgot that, you know, he lost to Del Rio in the Money in the Bank. You know, and I'm watching the John Cena match, great match, and all of a sudden it's like Alberto comes out. And, you know, because Kevin Nash comes out, this, that, and this. And I was like, oh, man, I forgot that. I thought he was a champion right away. Yeah. You know, so I just see it's just like more of the same. It's like, you know, it's like, yeah, we have this concussion policy in place, but it doesn't protect the people that need to be protected. It protects the people that aren't that good. Mm-hmm. And that person can say, it's kind of like, you know, workers' comp. You know, like, workers' comp is there. But someone like you and someone like me, we're not going to take workers' comp. We're going to work through it because that's the way we were raised. Workers' comp does not work for the people that work the hardest. It's for the people that work the least. And that's what I really took away from the whole thing. It's just, I'm kind of just shaking my head going like, you don't see what this guy was doing for you. You don't see that this guy connected to everybody. And the thing that what I like best about this podcast is, you know, Punk definitely has his own opinion on stuff. And the thing that he says is like, I sold more shirts than John Cena. That was never brought up. Nobody ever said that.
Even more than that, I thought, was when he mentioned, like, he's done as many, what's it called?
Make-A-Wishes
as John Cena does, but you never hear about it. I thought that was, it doesn't even faze me to hear that he could outsell Cena in merch and they wouldn't mention that. I mean, that seems to me about as obvious as, like, a rigged WWE, like, poll, mm-hmm. app poll, but it never really occurred to me, like, how much other wrestlers were involved in Make-A-Wish, because it seems like John Cena is the only person that anyone ever cares about. I know Titus did like one. I don't even know if it was really a Make-A-Wish, but it was kind of like on his own.
Yeah.
Things that he's done with people that I thought was really cool. But yeah, they don't ever mention anybody except for John Cena doing a Make-A-Wish.
And it's kind of as much as it seems that WWE during this whole time was changing in terms of getting wrestlers like the independent wrestlers with Daniel Bryan and CM Punk, no matter what they do, it's still the same. It's still the same machine. They pick a guy that they like and run with it. And, you know, I think a lot of it can be done with, you know, Stone Cold as well. You know, I think, you know, if Stone Cold doesn't get hurt, I don't think The Rock ever takes off. And the whole thing is like, you know, if John Cena has been relatively healthy, so they weren't forced to go to a guy to kind of pick up the slack for John Cena because John Cena was always there. But then you're looking at this product and you're going, okay, but so John Cena is your guy. This guy is like split like 50-50. People love him, people hate him. And you can have a guy like Daniel Bryan. You can have a guy like CM Punk. Whatever role you want them to be, you can have like 100% of them either hating him or liking him. But then while you're doing that, you're developing the character of CM Punk. You're developing the character of Daniel Bryan, whatever it is. And in the long run, people are going to like him because, you know, the cream does rise to the top. I think CM Punk rose to the top. Everything that he did, people follow this guy religiously no matter what, and they were invested in him. And all he had to do was just give him, like, an extra, like, 5 or 10% of support or whatever it is. And that
Give him his royalty check.
cut off the thing that's growing on his back or whatever it is.
I mean, fire him on his wedding day.
Yeah. So it's just kind of, you know, you want to talk about, like, best for business. It's not. I mean, it's like, okay, so you're hanging your hat on a guy that will never have any character development. And one thing that...
Well, I'll cut you off again. You brought up the best for business. I think Punk laid it out very clearly. And, like, it's something that, like, I think people know and they talk about with the part-time wrestlers. But I thought the way that Punk laid it out was very succinct. It's like, okay, I'm going to lose to this guy. I'm going to lose to The Rock. And who's going to be on the show on Monday? Not him, it's going to be me. And then you got to build me up until you need me to lose to Brock Lesnar. And who's going to be there on Monday? What's Brock doing on Monday? oh, he's not going to be there. Well, what am I doing on Monday? I don't know. Right? They didn't have any, like, they had plans for the guy that was always going to be there, and it was to lose to some guy that was going away every single time. And then on top of that, like, there's something like, they mentioned there's something like 26 writers, and everyone's only writing a John Cena storyline and an authority John Cena. Why do you need 26 writers to write one storyline? Okay, if you have 26 writers, you can't come up with stuff to go to happen with your mid-card guys, your Intercontinental, find a decent story for CM Punk and some of these other guys to get into. You need 26. If you have 26 people writing one storyline, you know they're going to fuck that storyline up, because this guy's got to get his, as X-Pac would say, this writer's got to get his shit in, this writer's got to get his shit in. It gets all bastardized, and then it comes out to what it's been.
And not only on top of that, but you're looking at, you're looking at Cena and the Authority. It's a storyline that nobody really cares about. And you can say that maybe Dolph has benefited from that storyline. It's still yet to be remain seen what's going on. But a good storyline will develop 5, 6, 7, 8 other guys. Even like you take a look at, so John Cena and the Authority, if it's a really good storyline, who is it going to benefit? Is it going to benefit the Authority? Is it going to benefit Cena? None of these guys need to be benefited from anything. And I go back to the time of when Hulk Hogan and Macho Man, when the whole Mega Powers exploded, I thought that was going to be the death knell of Macho Man, but it expanded his character. He became a great heel. He really took off after that whole thing. Not only did he have like a great buildup when he was playing face with Hulk Hogan, he probably had one of the best years of any wrestler. The guy was hot as all hell. And I mean, I remember, it's just like every weekend I wanted to see the Macho Man. I want to see him fighting superstars or Saturday Night's Main Event. He really benefited from that storyline. Here you have a storyline where John Cena's not going to get—he's not going to benefit from it because he's already playing a Superman role. The Authority is two people. It's like it's going to be Triple H and Stephanie. Well, who's the guy that really could have benefited from that? Randy Orton. And what happens to Randy Orton? He has to go do a movie, so he's taken out of the picture. Nobody has benefited from that storyline except for maybe Dolph Ziggler. But Dolph Ziggler is never going to reach. Dolph Ziggler is never going to do anything because who does he have to overcome to be the top face?
Right, Cena.
And it's not going to happen.
I mean, you know, I think Rollins benefited from the storyline, though not anywhere near what he could have. It's like you talk about, like, we're going to push you as high as we can, except for like to that ceiling, because you can't really beat Cena clean, and you can't cash in on Brock Lesnar for about another 6 months.
So I even disagree with that. I don't think, I mean, yeah, he's got more mic time, but even during that whole storyline buildup, who is he facing? He was facing, for a large majority of the time, he was facing Dean Ambrose. And then he's facing Randy Orton, and Randy Orton leaves. That story's unresolved, and he never had a run of being like the leader of the Authority. He maybe had it for, like, what, 2-3 yeah. weeks? Well, but they never played him the right way.
Yeah, I mean, I think his profile has risen. I mean, he's individually, he's probably in a better spot than he's been. But it's still, it's like, we're going to, like, they're, it's not like, let's shoot you up and see how high you can go. It's, again, we're gonna build you up, but you can't get too good. You can't have too many people like you. You can't get too high up on the totem pole right now. And like, why would you want to limit a guy like that that could be your future? Why do you want to limit a guy like Dolph Ziggler, especially when, you know, and I don't want to get into, like, I don't want to get into the Vince podcast, probably even this show, because I think there's too much to cover with Punk. But, like, his like, kind of reason, like, they had this thing when it was when he's talking to Stone Cold, and he's saying, like, that the guys in the locker room really aren't that hungry, save for a handful of guys. And, like, they don't, you know, they're just kind of, they're walking on eggshells. They're afraid to fail and things like that. They don't have a chance to really do that. Like, they're capped. They're limited. They don't get a chance to just say, how far can you take this thing? And that's what I think the biggest problem ends up being.
If there's anything that's coming out from this, from the Stone Cold podcast, and the one thing I do want to say about the CM Punk podcast was that it really gave kind of like a sense of closure. You know, it's like, finally, like, all the answers are there, because I remember reading stuff of, like, CM Punk is sick. He's eating meat again because he doesn't know what to do in terms of he's not getting better. So it was nice to know, like, okay. Well, I mean, it wasn't nice to know, but it was like, okay, this guy had a staph infection. How the hell can this guy have a staph infection for so long? And he really did look, I mean, doing the Dark shows, like, he should be dead. Yeah. There was a couple shows where he looked...
He looked green.
Yeah, I mean, he looked like he was close to, like, death. You know, and I don't mean that to be, you know, hyperbolic or anything like that, but I think the biggest thing that really kind of showed that something was wrong with him was when Chris Jericho had the match with Seth Rollins. And then I think it was either Daniel Bryan or Seth Rollins. It was either Jericho versus Rollins, but then the next Monday it was CM Punk versus Seth Rollins. And that match, they should have killed that match. I mean, it was had all the makings of a great match, but CM Punk was so slow. He was a step slow, and I'm sitting going like, what the fuck's going on with this guy?
Yeah.
So we
talked about it too. Like, it didn't seem like he had the work rate or the energy that he had before, and, like, you know, obviously we didn't know about the infection. We thought maybe he was just overworked, and it seems like that was a factor in it, but it seems like it was a lot more than that.
Yeah. I'm glad that the podcast was done. I'm glad it was done with Cabana. And I'm also glad, too, where CM Punk's like, I'm not trying to, you know, come here and bash the WWE. And then he went on for like 10 minutes, and when he was done, he's like, I said a lot more than I wanted to say, or whatever it was. It's bittersweet, because it's like, dude, I'm like, you could have had this on television. You know, this is the guy that you should have been going with, and this is the guy, like, this guy always delivered. You know, like, you wanted him on the mic for a reason. I'm thinking of the fat guy in the front row, and just stuff like that, that he could just turn stuff on a dime. Him even punching the guy in the stands. And then there's the other one, too, where he was in the stands, he was against someone, and there's like this one fan that was just standing there, just everything's happening right in front of him. Like, Punk gives him like a big old hug or whatever it is. And it's just like that small interaction like that, those small little things that you wanted to watch every week to see what he was going to do. And that really hasn't happened to me since The Rock was a monster heel. And even when he was playing the face and just his promos that he cut, there wasn't someone like that. And that was like, that really reminded me of The Rock. So I'm glad that he was able to say what he needed to say. I'm glad we finally have answers as a CM Punk fan. And it really, now it's like, okay, you know, it's like, I was going like, man, I'm like, I don't want this guy to stop wrestling. I want this guy back in the ring. And I want to see him. I mean, for selfish reasons, I want to watch this guy again, again, and again. And listen to this podcast, I'm like, okay, you do whatever the hell you want to do, because you laid out the reasons why, you're still true to yourself. And even though, and I consider this like, oh, you're true to yourself, and, you know, you rah, rah, rah. But the whole thing was that he was true to himself, but he was still trying to toe the company line. I mean, he was still trying to be the number one worker in there. And I always go back with him bringing up Harley Race. You know, you want to say there's two sides to every story, but I think the other side is, like, he wanted to be an all-time great. And Harley Race, guys like Ric Flair, would do the business no matter what. And there's finally a breaking point where, you know, Harley Race was such a tough guy in terms of he could do whatever he wanted to do because nobody could touch him back in the locker room. Flair, we can sit here and I can extol the virtues of Flair, but Flair had like 3 or 4 nervous breakdowns during that time. And sitting there going like, dude, Flair, I'm like, how could you have these nervous breakdowns? You're fucking Ric Flair. Well, this guy, you know, Punk didn't have any of those, and he walked out on his own terms. The one thing I do want to bring up, and the other thing that really kind of what I liked about the podcast was just saying, like, you know, Vince is out of it. Vince has no clue what's going on in the outside world. He has his own little kind of secular world, but the guy's like, what, 70-odd years old. I mean, what's the biggest, you know, when you get old enough, when we're in our 30s and people listen to this podcast right now, if you're in your 20s, when you get in your 30s and you know, 30s to 40s, you kind of look at your grandparents going like, dude, like, what the fuck happened to you guys? Well, they're old. They're getting old. Well, Vince is getting old. And the main thing that really stuck out with this whole podcast, and the one thing you're talking about, the glass ceiling with Cena, is when he says he doesn't think Cesaro can get over. It's like, he can't get over because you guys squash all this shit. you squash the number one. First of all, the airplane spin to me, or it wasn't even, is it called the airplane spin? It's not. It's like it's something else.
Cesaro swing. But
yeah, that's what it is. And that's one of the stupidest moves ever. I have never liked that move. The second Cesaro does it, because he was doing like for 25 revolutions and stuff, it's like everybody wants to see that. And so you ride that gimmick as much as you can, and then he's going to come up with something else. See what else he can come up with. But if you squash it because he's getting too over, and he's getting too over and starting to compete with John Cena getting over or whatever it is, you're going to squash this guy because he's becoming too popular. Same thing with Bray Wyatt. Same thing with the Wyatt family. Same thing with the Shield. It's going to get squashed because you can't have it affect your golden boy. And that's the biggest thing that I got out of him saying that Cesaro, because Stone Cold's always been a huge proponent of Cesaro, and I'm really glad that Stone Cold, Stone Cold's like, he's no holds barred, this and this. Well, he challenged Vince on Cesaro. He's like, how come this guy isn't getting over? Yeah. And he goes, well, because I don't think Cesaro can. It's like, well, it's because your son-in-law is squashing this guy, so he can't get past him.
I mean, the most definitive thing that McMahon said about why Cesaro wasn't getting over was maybe because he's Swiss, right?
Yeah.
Which again is this, it's like it speaks to what you're saying about the age thing. But and I'll go back to what I was saying before. Like his basic reasoning why he boiled down the whole thing of why the guys in the back aren't anywhere near as ambitious as what it was, the kind of climate of the attitude era is just, well, they're millennials. They look at things differently. They're not, and I work with millennials like all the time, and I'm not saying that there isn't like a lot of truth to what he said, but the top percent of these guys are extremely ambitious, right? Just, they're ambitious in a different way. They're not cutthroat. Like, they're not as willing to like slay someone to step over them, but they're ambitious. They have they do want things, like the high percentage of them. Some very smart ones that know how to achieve what they want. They're very high achievers. And I think for him to just dismiss the whole thing as, oh, well, they're millennials, that's how they are, I think he's missing the boat on that one too. But I'd like to, if we can, I mean, I think we've done a pretty good job here. I want to stay on the podcast, but everything we've talked about so far is stuff that was like really behind the scenes stuff. I want to address something that I thought was like really, I thought was really interesting, that's more ring related. CM Punk claims he came up with the idea for the Shield. That was like kind of mind blowing to me. And then especially the idea that he wanted to do it, and he wanted to bring up Cassius Ohno, Chris Hero. I just want to know what you think of that, because I think, you know, the Shield obviously worked. It was obviously great. I'm glad that they did the guys they did. I really like Roman, but you know, Chris Hero is a guy that I think they completely missed the ball on, and again, I think that's more Triple H's and Vince's hang up with someone's physique. But I mean, the three of those guys, could you imagine like the work that they would have done, and especially Team of Punk? I don't know. I just want to get your take on that part.
So, who was the original three guys? He wanted Cassius
And Rollins.
And Rollins, yeah. And
so, before that, they said they're going to put him with a faction with Big Show, Daniel Bryan, and Rollins, and some other guy that can't get over. And Punk said, no, that's not going to work. He didn't want to do it. Which I thought was pretty cool. He's like, I love Big Show, but there's no way in hell that's going to work. And then his reasoning also was, keep Daniel Bryan as far away from me. Because we can, anytime we want to get together, we can. And anytime we need to feud and put on a 5-star match, we can do that too. And I thought, like, just what he's saying is great. I mean, that's much more sense for the business than anything Triple H has shown in the last X amount of years that he's been running, to be honest. And I had a lot of high hopes for Triple H. But then when they came with the idea that was his idea, and again was ripped from him, and then Triple H is going to start claiming it as his own, just doesn't sit well with me.
Well, the thing that, when he said that, when he said Chris Hero, I mean, it's like just, I mean, when you listen to Punk talk, and he's talking about the way he feels about the business, there's a lot of head nodding when the stuff that he says. And the second he said Chris Hero, I was like, yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. And you know, he kind of picked Ambrose. I think Ambrose was kind of one of his handpicked guys. He's done business with Chris Hero, and plus Chris Hero is his friend, and so he's taking care of his friends. And I think at the same time, it's like he's going against a guy that wants to take care of his friends. So I mean, for him to say, like, me and Daniel Bryan could be the next Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels, well, who's Shawn Michaels' boy? Yeah. It's Triple H. And I think that's kind of another thing, too, is that Triple H wants to protect his own legacy, but he also wants to protect the legacy of his friends as well. At least is like his best friend. And it's kind of funny, like, Triple H will say Shawn Michaels is his best friend when it benefits Triple H. He'll say Kevin Nash is his best friend when it benefits Triple H. What people don't seem to realize with Triple H is that, yeah, he was part of the clique, but he was like the baby member of the clique. And there's this little brother mentality where, look at all these guys, you know, like, you're talking about the top guys in the business, and everybody has all this respect for Nash, for Shawn Michaels, for Scott Hall. And then, you know, then there's X-Pac. X-Pac is a psychic, great psychic. you know, he doesn't have to worry about Xbox. But it's a case where, at the same time, he wants to protect the legacy of Shawn Michaels, but I think at the same time, it's the whole rub thing again. Like, he's going to get the rub from Shawn Michaels. I mean, that's another thing, too. It's like, when Shawn Michaels comes back, you know, Shawn Michaels says, like, well, I want to do a business with Triple H because I know the Triple H will protect me. That's the Triple H that I like. You know, when things are natural. But if you're so... I see Triple H as being very insecure, and anything that can tarnish his legacy in terms of what he's done in the ring when he was in his prime, I think he makes the wrong decision every time. And you look at something like the Shield, you're not going to have, he's never going to allow a click to happen again, because first of all, he knows how bad the click was, but at the same time, it's like the click is like this storied backroom power. Well, you have, if you're going to have Ambrose, CM Punk, and then Hero, and then you have Seth Rollins at the same time, and then you bring in a guy like Paul Heyman as well, where you have, you know, and then Paul Heyman has history with Brock Lesnar.
And you know, Brian's still in that locker room.
Yeah, so it's all, you know, it's kind of a case where I think for them to say that Chris Hero can't do anything, for them to say that Cesaro can't do anything, that's a huge problem. I mean, that's a major problem within the business. There's no way that you don't allow Chris Hero to see at least what he can do, right? See what the guy can do. And that's why when we bring up Kenta, when we bring up El Generico and stuff, it's like, yeah, it's like you're kind of, you know, I'm excited about it, but at the same time, I don't really expect anything from it, because I think these guys, if you allow them to do what they can do, they're going to be better workers than Triple H ever was. And Triple H's main claim to fame is that he was one of the best workers in the WWE. Now, I know me and you don't think that, but there's a lot of people that think, they're like, look at all these matches that Triple H has had with everybody. And look at all the guys that he made, this, that, and this, this, that, and this. Well, we always talk about the John Cena glass ceiling. I think there's a Triple H glass ceiling as well. When I heard, you know, you talking like, well, what the Shield would have been with Chris Hero, whatever it is, yeah, Roman Reigns is the odd man out, but you can't have four guys. You know, I mean, like, you can't have, you know, you can't add another guy to the mix. And that's what I've always kind of like, what I've never really understood. It's like, okay, you have something good with the Shield, right? There's guys, there's probably other, you know, there's always like the fourth member, who's the fourth member of the Shield? That never went to fruition. Oh, who, you know, the Wyatt family, you know, like, you have the Wyatt family who's like, this guy is trying to get followers. Who else can you bring in? And the whole thing is, you know, and I know you weren't a fan of the Straight Edge Society, but they brought people in, you know, like every now and then they brought another person in, and they had like a four-man crew, and you could have probably brought someone else in, like maybe like an Eli Cottonwood or someone else, you know, to kind of bring stuff in and make this a really strong faction. And I think they really don't want to have factions, because then the faction becomes bigger than the WWE. It's very easy to squash someone, one singular person, but if you have a strong faction and it just has a ton of steam and everything like that, I think that it's hard for them to control. I think that's why they got rid of the Shield when they did. I think that's why they got rid of the Wyatt family when they did as well. Because you have so much upswell from the fans. It's like, well, let's see where this can go. I mean, how come you can't have the Shield be a faction for 2 years or whatever it is? I mean, I don't think them breaking it up was the right time. I thought what they did after, I mean, and what they did after the Shield, it worked. You know, every guy kind of got some more momentum, but how much more momentum do you think they would have gotten if they could build a storyline for a long time instead of just making like a quick fix with Seth Rollins and both these guys with the chair? Because you had the advent of Triple H coming in, you know, and the Authority starting to come in. It's like, well, who can we take? What can we do? Well, let's break up the Shield and let's fix Seth Rollins and let's kill anything that we had. And then at the same time, it's like, okay, let's have the Wyatt family get squashed by John Cena in one night.
So I'll reserve judgment on breaking up in the Shield only for this reason, and I think I agree with you. They had at least another year to run with that thing if they wanted to. That would have been good. I don't know the timing and the politics of it all, but my guess is that the injury to Daniel Bryan kind of forced their hand, because they now needed to get, like, kind of maximize the amount of great workers they had, and with the three of the Shield being together all the time. it was a little bit limiting, I guess. You know. So now with them being all three guys on their own, you know, that's three. Assume they're all healthy at one time. You know, you can get good matches out of any three of those guys with and expand what you can do with your roster. So I'll just give the benefit of the doubt, though I don't know what the actual inner workings of it was. But yeah, there was really no sense to breaking up the Wyatt family. That breakup really, I don't see how it served anybody. It's still really early in its infancy, but I don't see that it's necessarily serving anybody. I still feel like even though Rowan's getting like a mini kind of push right now, I don't think it's going to last for very long, especially if they're going to try to go with the he has a 165 IQ and he's actually a genius. I mean, I think that's pretty lame. Harper can just work, so I think he's going to be fine. And I think ultimately Bray will be fine. But it was much better as the threesome that they were. But we have the New Day now, so you know maybe that can just take over.
Yeah, whatever. I don't have a problem with the New Day. A couple things is that I think inherently wrestling fans like three or four man groups, and this can go all the way back to like Humperdinck Stable, Ellering Stable, and then of course my stable, which is the Four Horsemen. And the whole thing is like, I really thought, like, say if you had the Shield, bring in CM Punk as the fourth member, have him be the flag bearer, have him hold the title, and then you can have these other guys, you know, you could have
his back all the time.
Yeah, well, not only that, but then you can have you can have Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns be the tag team champions. You can have Ambrose kind of go back and forth or whatever it is, and then you know somewhere down the line, you know, you can have Ambrose, you know, or whoever it is. You can have any number of the three guys can go up against Punk or whatever. You can break them up that way, and all these three guys have great heat. Mm-hmm. The main point I want to say is that when wrestling was at its most popular, you know, and you're talking about the Monday Night Wars and stuff, and you look at the ratings, you have a 5.7 for one show. The other show is like 3.8 or 4.5. They would kill. Anybody would kill to have those numbers on a cable show. And you had two shows that were doing crazy numbers. One was, of course, being the other one by a large margin. But you had these crazy numbers. What was at the heart of all this? It was NWO. And I don't want to go into like how NWO stayed on too long and this and this. You had DX. And then you had the corporation, you had the corporation ministry, you know, so you had all these factions that really kind of ruled the wrestling world. And if you want to do good business, right, keep these factions intact and do it. The one thing I do want, so that's the one point I want to say. The other point I want to say with the whole Wyatt family thing is like, okay, Luke Harper, you can send Luke Harper off. You can make him the Intercontinental Champion. The guy's a great worker. He has great in-ring presence. But Rowan, keep Rowan, like have Rowan be like, the Arn Anderson to Bray Wyatt's Ric Flair. You know, like have Rowan just like back this guy up the whole time. And then slowly you can probably bring in someone else from NXT that fits the bill of what these guys are. And then you can always bring Luke Harper back into the fold at the same time. I mean, there's so many storylines that you can do with that. And and these aren't just storylines that are tried, you know, that you're sitting there and watching. It's like, okay, the opening segment's going to be, you know, like it was, you know, like, This week on Raw, the opening segment is like all the authority guys are just like, oh, God. You know, and it's like, oh, Cena's putting down, you know, putting down Seth Rollins. I mean, I realize John Cena is all about cheap heat. He is cheap heat extraordinaire. You know, it's like he tries
He's
to.
Rivaling Foley?
At least Foley could do it, though. At least he liked Foley. Like, Cena, he's just all about the cheap heat. You know, it's like making fun of Rollins and this, that, and this. It's just, you know, we're talking about Punk's podcast and what he kind of wanted to do with the Shield, and even that storyline was never resolved because the Shield came out during a match with him versus Ryback, right? And so the whole thing is, and then you have like, you know, Heyman still in the mix. There's talks about the Dangerous Alliance, you know, with Heyman, and you can have that now. You can have like a new Dangerous Alliance, whatever it is, and it never came to fruition. And my whole thing is like, okay, what would have happened if that came to fruition? And what you have is you have these main events that nobody cares about with John Cena. Then you have these matches with Daniel Bryan. You have these matches with CM Punk. They're all by themselves. And they're just kind of like throwaway matches. Even though the matches are great, they're just like throwaway matches because the end-all side is these main events that you don't care about. If you have a faction and you have these main events with John Cena and stuff like that, blah, 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 blah. But then you have these factions that actually mean something, you know, of all these four guys, you know, or three or four guys together. They win the belt, you know, they win all the belts in one pay-per-view, and you still have, like, John Cena as a champion, whatever it is. Then all of a sudden, it means something, you know, like, you're starting to follow it. It's like, it's more of kind of like a cult-type following. I mean, we follow groups. I mean, that's why we watch, you know, we watch football. That's why we watch basketball, you know, baseball. It's like you have these personalities within a group. And I just think it's just missed opportunity by putting these guys all on islands. You never really, I mean, who do you really care about? Right? I mean, who do you care about? I mean, who is the guy that you're watching in WWE right now? I mean, seriously. Is there, like, one guy that you're gunning for every week?
I mean, there's guys that I want to see every week, but I've basically lost all aspirations for anybody that I cheer for to kind of get anywhere, right? So it's like, you know, Dolph's been my guy. So, like, I'm happy that, you know, he's not jobbing out every single time he goes out to the ring. But I have no hopes anymore because the rug's been pulled out so many times. Rollins is another guy who I really want to see where this guy's career goes. But I know that he's in a holding pattern until, at the very least, after WrestleMania. Ambrose is kind of the same way. You know, now he's just going to – they've gotten what they could get out of him for, in their eyes, for the time being, kind of like bridging all their plans for when they lost Roman Reigns. And now that that's not – now that they figure out a way to write around that, I just fear he's going to be going from really good mid-card feud to really good mid-card feud, but ultimately – in another holding pattern.
Yeah.
So, and I would say, I'm kind of going back to when you asked the question in the Attitude Era with the Monday Night Wars. It's like what you had carrying it was these factions. I'll take it a step further, and it's what we always say. But what you had was the competition, and I think this would be the question that they should really ask themselves if they want to even pretend that what they're trying to book is best for business. Okay, because obviously with no competition, they can do whatever they want to do, right? But if they were really, really trying to do the best show they possibly could, they should ask themselves, okay, if I had to beat another company that was rivaling me right now, would I do this story or would I have this young guy get over because that's what's going to make people interested again? And it's like you said, they don't want to do that because maybe it's going to overshine whatever Triple H legacy he's trying to hold on to. Or maybe he's trying to protect Shawn Michaels' legacy, which is ridiculous because Shawn Michaels' legacy stands on its own, and I'm not even a Shawn Michaels fan. But you don't need to, he doesn't need to be protected. You know, you have, like, henchmen announcers to protect Shawn Michaels and say, oh, no one's ever going to be better than Shawn Michaels if that's the narrative you want to have. But if you start putting those matches on that people want to see, you know, with the guys that they're interested in, let Daniel Bryan and CM Punk be the next Shawn Michaels Triple H feud. It's like you could give that to the people if you really wanted to give the best product that you could, but they don't have to, so they won't. And that's where the problem is. They know they don't have to give the best product that they possibly can, so they don't.
And that's really what the state of is now. I mean, even watching the Sting and Undertaker thing on the Monday Night Wars, which really kind of seems to me that they're going to put these two guys together. We're going to see a match like nobody's going to care about.
Sorry, let me cut you off because even talking about Undertaker Sting, I don't even care about that. Let's go back to Cesaro, okay? If this was the Monday Night Wars, and Cesaro was getting over as all hell like he was with his giant swing, and the whole fan base was going crazy for him every time, body slamming the Big Show over a top rope in a battle royal legit, would they all of a sudden just pull the rug out from under him and completely change direction for no reason with the kind of support he was getting? Absolutely not.
Yeah, he would be like a Mankind.
Yeah, and the thing is, Vince McMahon is like trying to overthink this, like why it's not working with Cesaro. It was working with Cesaro. And I think, I don't know if he's going to admit it, but I think he knows it was working with Cesaro. And they just removed everything that was making it work. In the climate that it was back then, with the competition that existed, they would never pull the rug out. They would never. He tried to say, like, these guys have all this access to social media, but they don't know how to use it. Ryder was getting himself over, like, I could give a crap about Zack Ryder. And I actually was interested in what this guy was doing because he was like one of the first guys that really figured out how to do social media. And as soon as it became bigger than what they wanted it to be, they took it away from him. So I think that it's, I don't know that he's got selective memory on this stuff, or he's just isn't going to come correct on certain things. But like, there's plenty of examples that you could throw. Like, and I like the interview. You know, I like some of the stuff that he was saying. But without even digging too deep and doing too much research, you can refute like a lot of his reasoning of why certain guys aren't getting over and certain guys in this locker room aren't being what it was, you know, 10 or 15 years ago.
The biggest problem I have with what's going on right now, especially with the podcast with Vince McMahon, is that he has like a three-man bureaucracy, right? It's like, okay, so McMahon is the leader of the company, but we don't know if he's making the decisions or if Triple H is making the decisions. And if Triple H isn't making the decisions and Vince McMahon isn't making the decisions, then it's probably Stephanie McMahon making the decisions. There's no clear cut like who makes the decisions. I have no idea who's making the decisions, because until Vince McMahon he started showing up again, I was assuming Triple H was calling all the shots, and then he had the help of Stephanie McMahon to help him make the shots as well, because she's a McMahon. I don't know who's calling the shots. I don't understand.
My inside information tells me that, like...
He's there, Bobby.
I'm an insider, okay?
Yeah, and I know you do.
And he told me that, basically, Triple H, for, like, all intents and purposes, is running the show. But, like, Vince has final say to squash stuff, right? So, for the most part, Triple H really believes in something, then, like, McMahon's going to back him up. And, like, one of the better evidences of that was, like, a few months ago when Angle was trying to put feelers out to come back to WWE. And he asked Triple H, and Triple H said no. And then Angle went to McMahon and asked him if it was possible. And then once Triple H found out, he got incensed that Angle tried to go over his head. And McMahon basically said, well, if Triple H says no, then it's no. So that was kind of, like, the best evidence I got. But my understanding is that's kind of how it works. Triple H is running it. And McMahon will rubber stamp, or if he feels strongly the other way, then he'll squash it.
And then at the same time, but Vince McMahon isn't—he's not accountable to Triple H, and he can pretty much say what he wants to say because he's the main guy. And especially with the way the Punk podcast came out, was that Triple H works that to his advantage. You know, he works. I think there's a power structure there that people really don't know what it is, and it's like, well, oh, go ask Vince, and Vince could be like, well, go ask Triple H, or. Mm-hmm. And both of them say, well, go talk to Stephanie about it. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think there's a lack of power structure there that they don't understand, and it keeps them safe, you know, from, you know, where they can say stuff about that with social media. And I think Zack Ryder is a perfect point, because there was a upswell in terms of him on social media where he wasn't on TV, but he was getting so much pub and he was getting so much smart reaction on the IWC. That when he did come out, I mean, he was huge. And I was watching him. And I was like, yeah, okay, so let me see what this guy can do. And not only is this guy entertaining before pre-match, but then he's having these matches, he's having his spots. His spots are fine. Mm-hmm. And but you're looking at these spots going like, okay, he's only going to get better. And then they squash him. And how do they squash him? They put him with John Cena, and then John Cena squashes him. So, and then they make him like, well, let's make him let's make Eve the heel, and let's have, and all this stuff is like, okay, so what just happened here? So, we're an hour in. You want to hit our segments that we want to do, or you want to keep on talking, or you think we're good?
I don't have any people for the segments, so
I got some people.
If you got people, we can hit at least one there.
All right, let me fix everything up. Hopefully, I don't lose anything here. Cross your fingers, man. Cross your fingers. All right, so this Golden Stick, you foreshadowed a little bit before, but you're gonna be duly impressed. So I'm killing time until it starts up, but here it goes.
Why are you protecting that so-called spineless champion, Macho Man Savage? That's wrong. I'm not protecting anyone. That's wrong, huh? Well, ever since Macho Man Savage, the so-called world champ, has become the world champ, I notice, I understand that you have a big 35-room mansion in Beverly Hills. You have a big 200-foot yacht down in Florida, and you ride around in a brand new Rolls Royce limousine. Now, I want to know, is he giving you a percentage of his contract? Is there some kind of contract between you, boys?
What
you
and him? Honey used to right drive now. The Chevy Chevette. He's got a point. There's no point at all, obviously.
Well, ain't you going to tell me that there's no contract between you and Macho Man Savage? No.
Tony's been above reproach for years, and you know that. And why
Brother
did you question
Law,
me
tell
by
you
making
something.
Me a rat?
Sometimes my head is a little thick, and it finally dawned on me what's going on. It has nothing to do with Randy Macho Man Savage. It has nothing to do with him whatsoever. I finally figured out what it's all about. It's that Elizabeth, isn't it? It's that Elizabeth. She's doing favors for you, huh?
Oh, my goodness.
Who do you think you are? Who do you think you are to speak to me in that fashion?
Let me tell you something.
What is he doing? Can you believe
Let
this?
Let me tell you something, you spineless two-legged. Rick, nobody, I don't care if you are the president of the WWF. I don't care if you're the president of the Kingston Unit. I couldn't care if you're the president of the United States or the Queen of England. Nobody, but nobody puts their hands on bad news. And if you do it again, I'll beat all the ugliness off you.
Bad news, so old school, he throws in a WWF reference there.
you. Rat.
You spineless two-legged rat.
I've never seen a spineless two-legged rat, but yeah.
I saw one right there that day, and his name was Jack Tunney. As good as Bad News is on the mic, and this is, again, what is another thing that's missing in WWE today, but Jesse Ventura makes that segment.
Was that Jesse or
it was Jesse and Vince.
It wasn't Roddy?
Like,
the Chevelle was all,
yeah,
was all Jesse?
Oh, come on. And it, but even before that, when he's like, yeah, "Are you getting paid under the table?" And then he's got a point, right? And Ben's doing a great job, like playing the straight man off of Ventura too.
Yeah.
But that's gold right there. And then Brother Love was like not the greatest of segments either.
No.
But like Bad News was great, and Ventura and McMahon really enhanced that segment as well.
Well, there's a reason why my Twitter handle is named after Bad News Brown is Bad News Ron. I mean, that guy was the man, dude. Even watching like his squash matches on Saturday night, or not Saturday night, but Saturday morning and stuff, and he's beating up on a guy and he pins him. And the guy's pretty much like laid out, and then he pulls him up by the hair, and the ref starts getting in his face. He's all, "Huh? He's all, you don't like me, do you?" So it's just stuff like that. But we had to get that Bad News in there. Very good segment. Totally under. You talk about Cesaro. I mean, Bad News was totally underutilized, and I really thought that Bad News could be a really great heel champion. The timing wasn't right, and I don't know if the timing would ever be right for that guy, but it's just kind of one of those things, like, a great worker could put on a great match. His matches with Hogan, I thought, were really good. I mean, even though Hogan's matches were the same match over and over again, I thought Bad News, when he was making his run, as his last run as a kind of superstar champion, Superman champion. My favorite matches with him, of course, were Macho Man, but then it's Bad News, and then it's Haku as well. I mean, I thought the match he had with Haku, when Haku was the king, I thought were great matches.
Yeah.
So, we talked about it way back when. You actually talked about it. You brought it up. It was your baby of a segment, you know, that you remembered.
When we inducted Bad News, is that?
It might have been, I think we did it on the Golden Stick, too. I think we put it on the Golden Stick, but
Now you got the audios.
Yeah. But I just imagine, like, you know, because the thing that we prefaced it last time was that they would kind of, you know, show that, or say that, Bad News would say that he'd write letters to Jack Tunney and stuff and never get a response. And he actually said it before, but it's like a 4 minute long segment. And nobody can do a 4 minute segment on this show except for me. But I can just imagine, like, Bad News on the road, penning a letter to Jack Tunney.
Leaving a stamp.
Yeah, and then getting a stamp. And he's getting all mad. You know, you could tell me he's getting all mad. He's like, you could tell he's just, like, getting, like, overcamped with emotion. Whatever. It speaks for itself. So let's go into
the hall.
Let's go into the hall.
All right, so I think that you're going to agree with this one here, notwithstanding some of his more recent like tirades and whatnot, but I think it's kind of extended his career, like even though he had a really long career and, you know, he's very old at this point, you know, can't wrestle, but like in some ways I think he might have like brought the concept of the shoot interview to the forefront on top of all the great work that he had done. And I want to induct the Sheik, man.
Yeah.
I think maybe we should have done that like a long time ago. The guy was a great wrestler in his time in his own right. A bitter guy, no doubt. But in some cases, I think he kind of has the right to be. But was the world champion, you know, that dropped the belt to Hogan, kind of started, you know, he was that stone that got stepped on that started Hulkamania. You know, had his good match, had some pretty funny promos in his times, tagging with Volkoff and stuff like that. And, you know, really after Hulk Hogan, one of the guys that, you know, never really got the rub, like, you know, his career didn't necessarily go up after Hulk Hogan, but went on to still probably wrestle another 20 years, did a lot of independent stuff, like when the indie scene wasn't really great, but just, you know, going around doing gyms after he was, like, you know, one of the biggest acts in wrestling through the 80s. And then kind of, you know, reinvented himself through shoot interviews and whatnot. You know, some of it's good, some of it's over the top, but like, dude's entertaining as hell.
Yeah, and he had his Twitter account as well. I don't follow him on Twitter, but you know, every now and then my follower, you know, the people that I follow and
yeah, we follow enough wrestling guys that
that you get a retweet from and stuff, and then you go into his timeline and just read all the stuff that he talks about. I mean. The Sheik is one of those guys, and you know, he had, even after when he dropped the belt to Hogan, he still had a nice run in WWE. You know, he typecast as a certain type of character, but just one of those guys, like, you just knew was tough as nails, and anything he did in the ring or everything that he did in the ring was legit and
stiff.
It's stiff. If he won, you didn't go like, oh man, this guy sucks. You know, but, and if he lost, you didn't say that either. Just a good storyteller. Just, you know, it's back when wrestling, every match it seemed was like a match unto itself, and it didn't need storylines or whatever it is. I mean, of course, there are storylines involved with it, but kind of like, it really reminded me of kind of like, he's one of those guys that, you know, like during the, we're bringing up the Attitude Era again, from WCW side to the WWF side, WWE side, you had all these undercard performers that could perform in the ring. And he was a great worker. I mean, you know, people want to say, like, WWE was full of cartoon characters. And, yeah, they were, and WCW was more kind of like the Southern-type style wrestling that emphasized the heels, emphasized the technicians in the ring. Well, what people forget is that WWE, even though they're cartoon characters, had some great workers in the ring. Very old-school-type wrestling. And I think a lot of that has to do with them kind of overtaking Stampede. What people kind of seem to forget is that Flair and Sheik were in the same wrestling class with AWA, and there's Bob Ruggers, you know, who people kind of forget, but Bob Ruggers was a great worker. I think it wasn't Brian Blair, but it was the other guy, Brenzel, and then
great athlete in Minnesota.
Yeah, and then you had Patera and Patera whatever, but there's not like any one match that stands out. There's a couple promos that stand out, the 22-inch neck and the 22-inch arm. You do a spot-on rendition of that we have heard before. Mine isn't too bad. Mine's pretty good. But, you know, I think at the same time, he's like with Nikolai Volkov and stuff and everything like that. You know, guys that didn't have a lot of, you know, they weren't hot, but they put on good matches. And you watch the matches, very old-school style. So, yeah, he's definitely worthy of being in. Match I want to talk about. There's two that I kind of want to talk about. I'll let you, and I don't think you've seen the one that I wanted to bring up, but fitting that we were talking about The Undertaker and you cut me off about The Undertaker, but Sting as well. The Sting match that I would kind of want to talk about would be Sting versus Flair at Starrcade. It was Clash of Champions, but you haven't seen that one, and that's the one that really put Sting on the map. But the one that I do want to kind of talk about, I think is more fitting, is I wouldn't mind revisiting Undertaker versus CM Punk. And it's kind of what you kind of felt after watching that match or while you're watching that match.
So I think that's a match I want to go back and watch. Because I liked the match. I thought the match was pretty good. I was a little bit invested. It was more like I was kind of I was watching it as a fan, and when I say that, in the sense that
that's a good thing.
Yeah, but in the sense that I wanted to believe that Punk could win, because I kind of thought like there was a real opportunity for a turning point right there. You had kind of had this whole like series of these one-off like celebrity wrestlers coming back, and it seemed like it was getting to the point where people were really noticing and getting tired of it, and like what we kind of thought, this whole idea of like passing the torch and who would be a better guy than CM Punk to lead that locker room forward, and that was kind of the hopes I had. So I kind of watched it with those kind of that lens on, so to speak. So at the end, I was a little bit disappointed in the result. But I thought the match was pretty good. But I actually, that's one that I do have been thinking about the last couple of weeks. Like, I want to go back and watch again to just watch it, knowing the outcome, and then just kind of see, like, from a, not that it's like going to be a technical marvel, but from more of a technical standpoint and stuff. I thought Punk held his own, and he kind of showed that even though he's like the smaller guy, you know, you can put him in against a big guy, and like the Undertaker, and he can put on a good match. But the other thing too is for all like the people that talk about how good it is and stuff like that, you know, from seeing what Undertaker's been able to do the last few years, Undertaker doesn't really have a whole lot left in the tank, right? And like, I think it speaks a lot to the talent that CM Punk has, that he's that much smaller than a guy, but then can go out and with a guy that's old and doesn't have the mobility that he once had, can still make that guy look legitimate.
Well, I don't think it was a case that CM Punk held his own. I really think that's, to me, that was really kind of Punk's kind of swan song as a wrestler. I mean, the funny thing is like, I felt that CM Punk had more of a chance to beat Undertaker than Brock Lesnar did. I mean, Brock Lesnar was totally out of left field. I think because of looking at it through a fan's perspective, going like, well, there's no point in having Undertaker lose to Brock because Brock's not going to do the business. You know, he's not going to be there day in and day out.
Well, and the other thing too is they've used Lesnar as a celebrity jobber so often. Bring him back out of nowhere, lose to Cena. Bring him back out of nowhere, lose to Triple H. So it seemed like that was kind of his lot in life, was build this big event match and have him lose it to whoever you needed him to lose to.
You know, I just wanted to see. You know, so it's one of those big what ifs in life. Like, I wanted to see, like, well, what if Undertaker did the job for CM Punk? And looking at it through a fan's eyes, I could totally see Undertaker doing the job for CM Punk and passing on the torch to him. This wasn't the first time they ever faced each other. They faced each other before. And, Undertaker, I think, going into his first series of matches with CM Punk, never thought he would respect the guy. And then at the end, he did respect him. And I think the Undertaker, he was getting to the point of, like, the Undertaker right now is like Andre the Giant. You know, he's a little bit more mobile than Andre the Giant is, but he's not going to have those killer matches anymore. Watching that match, CM Punk match, and Undertaker match at WrestleMania, it was really like the CM Punk show. And then CM Punk brought out certain spots with the Undertaker where it made Undertaker look legit. Yeah, you're watching the match and you're like, man, Undertaker's old. He doesn't have it anymore. He's like, but you know what? He's still putting on a great match. And I think CM Punk helped him out in the beginning by allowing him to kind of make it believable that that Undertaker athletically is in the same element as CM Punk, even though he isn't and will be ever again. But watching that match, it was watching a nice, good old school match. And yeah, you know, I knew CM Punk was going to lose. I was mad when he lost, and that probably lasted all maybe about 3 seconds. And then when I sat back and watched the match, I'm like, all right, you know, it's funny because the other thing that CM Punk brought up was like, you know, Triple H was saying like, oh, but you stole the show, so you're the main event. Everybody sees that as the main event. The only difference is that, listen, Triple H can say that because Triple H has been in the main event multiple times in the pay-per-view. Even when CM Punk had his run, he was maybe in the main events, in the pay-per-view, in the main event maybe once or twice. He wasn't even the main event, but he always stole the show. It's like, you can say that, and you can hang your hat on that. If you've been in the main event, like Triple H has, Triple H totally believes that if you steal the show, that everything's fine. Well, you've had Macho Man and Randy Savage steal the show. And what happened? Macho Man started main eventing all the time. And that was his kind of his break into the main event status. Well, CM Punk has put on great matches with anybody. You know, I really think that I kind of harken it back to when people say Shawn Michaels and Razor Ramon in the ladder match, that Shawn Michaels had the match with the ladder, not Razor Ramon, which I think is totally wrong. I think there's a little bit of truth to that, but, I mean, Razor was doing some nice stuff, too. I mean, Razor was the babyface, and he did what he was supposed to do. I think CM Punk was having a match with CM Punk as the heel. You know, he was blending his style of how he wrestles and combining that with him being the heel and him playing the heel and putting over a guy like Undertaker. I thought he did the job. Undertaker did his end of the job. I really want to see what would have happened if he had gotten that torch. Would CM Punk have that thing removed when he asked it to get removed? When he asked Chris Hero, he says he wants Chris Hero to be a part of the Shield. Would have Chris Hero been a part of the Shield? Would Chris Hero be in the WWE right now? So there's a lot of variables to it. I think it's like a big what if turning point in what the product we're watching now. And I don't want to sit here and go like, oh, it would be so much better. I'm not saying that, but it'd be nice to know, like, you know, like Marvel has their series Marvel What If. Yeah, which I think I used to read that a lot. I have like probably about 50 issues back in my storage in the back over there. But I think it's a big What If match. But at the same time, I wanted Punk to win. But did Punk come out better for that match? I think he did. But there was no payoff at the end. I think that's the saddest part of that whole match, was that he never got the benefits of that match.
Yeah, and I think he lays that out pretty well in the podcast too. So,
we'll come full circle on the whole thing.
Exactly. So, I mean, I'd say anyone, you know, if you're interested at all in CM Punk, and I'd say you got to listen to that. It's a really good, compelling podcast, and I'm pretty excited that tomorrow is going to be like the revisited podcast with him and Cabana too. So any of the fan questions or anything that they didn't get an answer to that they wanted to go delve into further, that's gonna be out tomorrow. So I'm looking forward to listening to that.
So it's gonna be Punk and Cabana tomorrow as well.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll listen to that as well.
Yeah, I think possibly they're recording it tonight, because someone that I follow mentioned that I think it sounded like he was live streaming it, but I think it'll probably be out, you know, available on whatever podcast format that Cabana uses tomorrow. So
Cabana. Good podcaster.
Yeah.
You know, let's the guy talk. Very good. One more podcast that I want to kind of suggest to you and to everybody else is, I've only listened to the first one, but Stone Cold and the Bray Wyatt podcast. Have you listened to that podcast? Bray comes off very good in it. And really kind of, you know, you talk about like the millennials, right? This guy is an old school guy, the way he views the business and the way he kind of developed his character.
I heard a clip of it where he was talking about what characters he pulled together to come up with the,
like Dan Spivey being a main guy, and I haven't heard of Dan Spivey in years, but now it makes me kind of want to go back and kind of look at the character that Dan Spivey was. But a lot of revelations in that one too, where you're thinking like, you know, the things that he says, and because I always thought like Dusty was kind of like the main guy that kind of gave him that character. Well, he kind of disputes that a little bit. So listen to that podcast. It's a two-part podcast. The first one is really good, and Bray. there's one thing that I said Cream rises to the top, and when he was getting sent back down, you know, to NXT, you know, he went to Triple H, and he's like, why, you know, he's like, what did I do or whatever, and Triple H is like, you know, hey, kind of just looks at him and smiles and says, you know, the cream rises to the top. And Bray says, like, it's like, I don't know what he meant by that in terms of why he was saying it. He's all, but I took that to heart, and that really helped me elevate me to be the character that I am. So we'll see how it goes. But check that one out. We'll check you guys out later in Moosescale number. I think this is 80. Yeah, this is 87. So we'll have 88 next week. Back to back weeks.
Yeah.
This schedule looks like it might work out a little bit. Yeah.
The train will keep rolling, and we got to come up with these moodies pretty soon.
Yeah, and the best thing I like about this, you made me excited because you told me on Sunday, like, dude, listen to this podcast. You gave me some homework to do. And it's like, all right, good. It's like, we have something to talk about. So keep on coming with homework. We have Better Have My Dillness Over Here on Bad News Ramen. We'll check you out next week, and we're what it is, Dean.
Fake breasts.
Fake breasts. There you go. Good job.
Johnny Blaze. Lou Diamond.
Representing my kids.
Tony Stark.
Universal Frontier.
original blood clot bad boys.
Who come to get you? None, they want guns. I'll be the first to set off shit, laugh to run. Who roll together as one. I call my brother son cause he shine like one. Check it. Scriptures hit the body like sword or shoddy. Like my hair naughty and my nose piece snotty. Fuck a nigga hottie, that whole pussy probably. Burn like the deserts of Mogadi for red. Ain't nothing fraudulent here, we pioneer. Commandeer a new frontier, this be the whoop, yeah. 36 chambers of fear, huh, you lost it. Information leaking out your forces. Time to forfeit your crown and leave the grounds. There's a new sheriff in town holding it down. It's the two holster, shit shot smoker. Wanted dead or alive, bounty on the poster. Wild in the west, a student of my culture. And life is the test, hold up. Let a nigga catch his breath. I'm still paying dues and the last one is death. Back to the essence with that shit you stressing. This rap profession, now beat the cap. The son of the shadow, I'll bless my style. Criminology pays the last times and days. Johnny fucking Blaze. This goes for niggas who know.